Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the SOM TV podcast. My name is Jason Wise. On today's episode, which was a lot of fun to record, I am speaking with the CEO and founder of Vivino, an app that you might have on your phone, which takes pictures of wine labels, and you can categorize what you drink, you can rate them, you can even buy wine. This app has insane reach. Millions and millions and millions of people across the entire world use this. And because of that, they have an astounding amount of data on what you drink. So I have the CEO and founder of Vivino, Heine Zachariasen. He is a Danish guy who has come up with this wild way to have user-submitted data on this app, and we dig deep. We're going to go into how hard it was to create, all of the crazy stuff that he has found that people, you know, through their ratings and through what they drink. It's a lot of fun, and I look forward to it very much. But first, this episode is brought to you by SOM Blinders, our blind tasting card game we created to make blind tasting fun and competitive in your house. If you go to blindersgame.com, you can order one of three decks or all three decks. One is red and whites, one is just white, one is just red. They're all very different from each other. And the holidays are coming up. This is a great gift for the wine drinker. Blindersgame.com. Without further ado, the CEO and founder of Vivino, Heine Zachariasen. So Heine, it's an honor to have you on the SOM TV podcast. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Such a pleasure to be here, Jason. Thank you for inviting me.
Hey, you know, this is I don't know if we'll, I think people are very familiar with the Vivino app. You know, I can't even tell you how many times I pull out a bottle of wine at a party or a gathering, or at least before COVID, and everybody would pull their phone out and have to scan the label. And I'm trying to think, this has just sort of become a thing that everybody does now. And I want to get into your story of how, in God's name, you came up with this idea, but more so, how did it work? I mean, how did you actually pull this off? Because I think the idea is one thing, but the implementation is insane.
Yeah, I think, you know, I talked about this quite a few times, and I think one of the core things here is that you have to have some naivety going into this, right? Because I'm obviously a wine guy now because I worked in the wine industry for the past 10 years. But when it comes to this and doing this product, anyone who knew anything about wine said, you know, you can't do that. There's just too many wines out there. So you have to be sort of, yeah, no, just do it. And that's what we did.
And you realize, I mean, I think you hit it on the head with naivety. I would say it's a much different but a similar path with me becoming a filmmaker in wine is that I didn't know how stupid I was when I started it. And so I started it. And I imagine it's kind of, why don't we take a step back? And for any listeners who don't understand or maybe just use the Vivino app casually, what is it that you created? What is this app? What does it do?
Yeah. So the core thing here really is that people don't know what wine to pick, right? They're standing in a supermarket aisle, see this wall of wine, and just don't know what to pick. You know, they can pick something because of the price or the fancy label. And by the way, if the label's fancy, they probably spent most of the money on making the label rather than the wine. You should not pick that. So the core feature here, how do we help them do that, right? And that's what the Vivino app does. You take up your smartphone, take a picture of the label with the app. Within 3 seconds, we'll have all the information about the wine. And most foremost, like, is it any good or is it, you know, not so good?
Right. So I'm familiar with your story. You sort of had a similar situation. You were standing there at a wine shop looking at all these wines and you thought, how the hell am I going to figure out what to drink? And that's where the spark came from, correct?
For sure.
Now, were you in tech before this? I mean, so you came at this from a technology standpoint, not a wine standpoint.
Exactly. More of a tech and product entrepreneurial saying, hey, I can't be the only one who has this problem. How do we solve this problem? And in tech and so on, it's all about timing. We don't know that when we hit the right time. But when you think about it, like in 2010, you know, smartphones, the iPhone was just coming out and starting to get popular. They all had a camera. They were all online. All that happened around the same time as this technology evolved. And suddenly the time is just right for this product.
When you made it, was it designed to be a curation thing or just a catalog? Because I think a lot of people use it to figure out what they've drank too. They're kind of keeping it as like, I've had this wine, I've had that wine. Was your goal with Vivino to make it like, we want to show you what to drink or we want you to remember what you had drank?
Yeah, it actually changed as the product evolved, right? So in the beginning, we had this slogan, never forget another wine, which meant, hey, you want to catalog your wines. But really, it was never because we wanted to have that slogan. It was because we couldn't really solve the other problem yet. So we always knew, no, we want to build the biggest database, all the ratings, all these things. But in the beginning, we used the other slogan just to get the ball rolling, right?
Okay, makes a lot of sense. I mean, I think that's where when we were making Somme, it's right around the same time that this came out for the very first time. And I remember, you know, when you're around a bunch of, you know, sommeliers and winemakers and stuff, you tend to drink a lot of really interesting wines. And I remember people all around me, you know, pulling out their phones and taking pictures. It was like, what in the hell are you guys doing? And so that was the first time. And I think they were using it mainly to categorize or catalog the wines that they had. But now, and I do want to get into your story, but I mean, now you guys, you guys have, it's almost, you can buy wine. You can, it's scary what you guys have, have done in a decade.
We think it's cool though, but yes, it is fantastic, right? We have like 1.4 billion pictures of wine labels. You know, every bottle of wine is cataloged. You know, the ratings is one thing, but now we're really getting into taste because we have machine learning reading all these reviews and really putting a structure on what the wine tastes like, and like amazing things coming up. And obviously, buying through the app is our monetization on it.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that was a big thing of how at some point do you ever make money off of this incredible invention? You know, any tech company has to deal with, you have a great thing now. How do we monetize it? But yours is an easy solution. I mean, obviously.
Yeah, and it compared to other products, sometimes the how to make money comes in the way. Really isn't the case for us. Like, it's a feature. People say, oh, wow, I can buy it through Vivino. And we've been very fortunate now because, you know, as a lot of people have been struggling through this Corona thing, we've really, you know, we've grown like crazy and are now like a profitable company and so on. So it's really been, we've done really well commercially due to it, although a lot of others have been struggling.
Yeah. So, okay. Here's where I think you and I have a lot in common. We both came into this industry as outsiders. And I don't think, you know, in my case, I don't think the wine industry looks at me at all as someone that they're like, oh yeah, we welcome you. I mean, it's an interesting process. I will make a film and it has a lot of very prominent people in it. And then they will go, yeah, the movie's good, but they don't look, it's a strange feeling. And I wonder, were you welcomed in by the wine industry? Because the problem I had was, you know, I hate to call out names, but I mean, people who rate wines, Wine Spectator, all these things, I sort of looked at sommeliers as competition now. Uh-oh, others are telling me what to drink. And so they didn't really want to promote. Do you understand what I'm saying? They didn't really want everybody to go watch the Somme movies because, you know, now there's more people who would tell you what to drink instead of us. What was it like for you?
Yeah, no, we were a total threat to them, right? Like, I remember, and this is very early on, I'm talking to a Somme somewhere, and he says, when I sort of explained it to him, it wasn't much. He said something like, wow, this scares the shit out of me, because he was afraid that you know, I was going to put something in their pocket that was just as strong as him with all this knowledge and so on. And that's when I realized that, okay, you know, we have to be careful how we speak to them and so on. I, you know, personally, I think, you know, Somme's are, when you have the privilege of working with a Somme in a restaurant, it's amazing, right? But most people don't go to restaurants with Somme's, and most of the time there isn't a Somme, right? So in the real world, you really need Vivino, right?
Yeah. No. This is, and you know, I like, we're like Wine Spectator and the Wine Advocate and Decanter. I mean, did they go, yay, this is great technology? Or did they go, uh-oh? I mean, because I found it to be, you know, I didn't realize the world I was walking into. I didn't know that there was this hierarchy of everybody scrambling to have your attention. Yeah. And so now that you guys have all of this, I wonder, what was it like at the beginning and what's it like now?
Yeah, obviously now we have, like, it's easy in the beginning. They will just ignore you and be polite to you. I think that's fine. But obviously as the strength grows and people actually look at these ratings and take them seriously, then that changes. That dynamic really changes. And, you know, we definitely become more and more respected. And I think we sort of move up slowly. You know, we go from the less expensive to like the medium. And I guess the ones that already have a mega brand, they still don't care. But everyone up till that point now says, okay, we got to look at these Vivino ratings. They matter.
Yeah, well, you guys are kind of like, you know, it's like you can look around to the left and the right, but right in front of you is a mountain. It's kind of hard to avoid. I mean, it's, I think that's a really good place to be, but it's also, I'm sure, you know, you want to be able to work with other people, but I can't sure. imagine that they're just like lining up to go, yeah, tell us what to drink. Now let's talk about rating. Let's talk about the concept of rating wines. And, you know, this is always a touchy subject for everybody. Psalms or, you know, it's always like the way I do it's fine, but the way anyone else does it is not fine. That's kind of how I've seen the industry act.
It's true.
You know, Robert Parker is all good with ratings, but everyone else hates his ratings. Wine Spectator doesn't like anything but the way they do it. Sommeliers say, oh no, it has to be obscure. It can't be something anyone's ever heard of to be good. And like, and so when you guys do this kind of, how would you call the way it's rated on Wine Spectator? Is it, it's, or no, not on Wine Spectator, Vivino. I mean on Vivino. It's more of a group. I'm trying to think, how do you classify that? Because it's not one person's rating. It's
no, it's the community rating, you could say, right? And I think it's we had to make a lot of decisions there, right? Because everybody came to us and said, why, what are you doing with 5-star rating? That's stupid. Everyone else does 100-point. You should be doing 100-point. And we said, no, we don't like the 100-point scale because most people just don't understand it. And specifically the group that we want to appeal to is like, we want Vivino to be for everyone. They know a 5-star rating. They see it, you know, in the App Store. They see it on Google. They see it on Yelp, everywhere, right? So we really believed in, you know, we want this to be a community rating for everyone.
Interesting. So, I mean, but everyone, that's a lot of people. I mean, how do you, Jesus, I mean, how do you have a company? How many, it's public knowledge how many users of the app you have, right? I mean, how many people use this app?
So we have almost 50 million downloads. And every month, 10 million people interact with the app, right? So it's quite a big number these days. And just to give you an idea about this, right? So when you compare us to, say, Wine Spectator or Parker, you know, they would rate 20,000 wines a year. Like, so they have a staff and they rate, like, say, 20,000 wines. And this is where we're different, right? Because when they do 20,000 a year, we do 100,000 a day. Right? So proportions are completely different. We'll have rated every single wine out there.
I think it's like if you look at like a website like IMDb, Internet Movie Database, and you have, there's no critics rating. So if like Shawshank Redemption has, or Pulp Fiction has like a 9.5 and it's rated one of the best films ever, that's done by people who are just watchers of the movie. And that drives critics nuts. Critics don't want the people to go, hey, I gave Ghostbusters 2 a bad review, but users love the movie, you know, so it gets a really high rating. So I just, it's really interesting to think about wine in this way because wine, a lot like movies, is so subjective. Yeah. You know, it's so like, I just wonder how the ratings cut through this stuff. Is it,
yeah,
you know,
but
I
ask
guess,
yourself,
you know,
yeah, if you want to drink a $20 wine, right? Ask yourself, who do you think you have more in common with? Somebody else who drinks a $20 wine or somebody who tastes 50 wines a day and he or she is going to tell you what to drink? And we just think that community, that sort of peer-to-peer thing has more value to you. It's just more relevant to you.
No, I mean, it makes complete sense. It really does. All right. Well, let's talk about your background, and then I want to get into some of the stuff. I hope that you have some stories from the data, anything that you can tell us that is interesting or funny or strange. But first, where did you grow up? Where are you from, and how did you get into this world?
Yeah, I probably grew up in a pretty unlikely place. I come from a place called the Faroe Islands. The Faroe Islands are located between Norway and Iceland, in the middle of the North Atlantic. It's 50,000 people. It's basically a few rocks in the middle of the North Atlantic. Amazing place to be.
Incredible wine in the Faroe Islands, from what I gather.
There is no wine scene. And I promise you one thing, you know, I knew about two kinds of wines when I grew up. It was red and white, and there was no other distinction between that. What people drank up there back then was basically beer and something called aquavit. Do you know aquavit?
Yeah, it's like fire water.
Yeah,
right.
I mean, it's amazing.
I certainly know. Every time I'm in a place that makes it, they make me drink way too much of it,
and yes,
it is a rough morning the next morning. So in the Faroe, let's talk about the Faroe Islands for just a second. So, because I think this is really important where people are from. What kind of food do you eat there? I mean, do you guys eat like stereotypically, do you eat like puffin? Do you eat like, you know, thinking about like Iceland or something like that?
Sure,
what do
yeah.
you guys eat?
Yeah, it's very fish-based, obviously, and very lamb-based. The unique thing is, and again, when I grew up, there was nothing there. Like there was no restaurant scene. There was like two hotels and later on a pizzeria, right? So there wasn't much. But the cool thing about it is we do this fermented food. So there were no fridges back then, so you had to do something. But basically, you take a lamb and you hang it up in this special house you build, and it doesn't actually rot because of the special salt that's in the wind and so on. So you can hang there for a few months without rotting, and then you get this the most amazing meat you'll ever try. It can be a little bit tricky for foreigners, but for me, that is just the best food you can get. So a lot of fermented stuff.
Oh, that's incredible. Now, I know Iceland, too, has a lot of... You know, you have to figure out how to preserve food.
I yeah,
mean, the
exactly.
Faroe Islands, I mean, I know this is not, you know, typical wine topic, but is a really, really incredible crossroads as far as, you know, shipping and travel and exploration. It's just a really, really interesting place historically. So the fact that you're from there, I could spend the whole podcast talking about this.
Yeah.
So how do you go from a place that is, you know, pretty cold part of the year and, you know, filled with sheep and such to getting into tech? How did this happen?
Yeah, that feels like a stretch, right? But actually, you know, it's for a small place, pretty well educated. It's part of the Nordics and so on. My father was actually at the local university, which back then, I don't know if they had the 50 to 100 students or something like that. But he was definitely into tech. And there wasn't much access to computers and so on, but, you know, he would sometimes drag these computers from university so we could, you know, sit on them and have fun with them over the weekend and so on. So I was always brought up with this tech background. And then at some point you sort of hit the roof because there isn't more education. And then you move to Denmark to get more education. And yeah, I'm more of my bachelor is in business, but I've always been seen as a nerd and just love technology and. Yeah, entrepreneur, I want to build something.
That's fantastic. So what did you do before this, before you did Vivino?
Yeah, we built another company. It was in software security. And I really said to myself back then that was a product I wasn't very passionate about. I said, you know, next time I start something, I want to do something that's fun, like something that appeals to people and like wine. And that was just spot on for me.
So when you created Vivino, I mean, one thing that's hard for me as a creative person is like letting go. And I think user submitted stuff scares the hell out of me. I mean, the fact that you built, oh my God, the fact that you built this entire thing and now have, what, 10 million people act. I mean, it's insane how many people are interacting, but it's not all, but mostly user submitted. I mean, that is quite a bit to give up to the user, in my opinion. I mean—
Yeah, we did have certain sort of, I wouldn't say rules, but when we started out, we still have a big team in India to help us structure the data and so on. So we always had the philosophy of, you know, you send us a picture of a bottle of wine, we'll add it to the database with our team, you know, put the core features on, hey, what's the grape, what's the region and so on. And back in the day, it was pretty basic, but now we have a team of, you know, amazing people that look at that and make sure everything's accurate. Then the users come and put reviews and ratings and make sure things are accurate on top of that. That's why the database has become really good over time. But in the beginning, it really wasn't because we sort of, you know, I won't say we let it go, but we've just improved it a lot. But to get started, you have to let things happen, right?
Yeah, I'm still learning this with my own company. It's it's a more of a challenge than I realized, and it's minute by minute.
And if you think about it, someone like Apple, right? They build these amazing products, but Apple, they're really, really good at taking products all the way and making them perfect. And if you have that mindset and build something with Vivino, you'll never get there. You just can't. Like, oh, all wines have to look perfect. Well, you can't do that. There are 10 million wines out there from 200,000 producers. You're going to have to, you know, everything's not going to be perfect.
Oh, man. Can you come run my company, please? I could use some help. So at the very early stages, you know, obviously it's so easy to look at this as a wine thing, but I'm sure everything you've dealt with has been tech, has been numbers, has been storage, has been data. But what were your challenges in the wine space? Because I think most people listening to this podcast are thinking about it from as a drinker, as a collector, as a, you know, what were the big challenges from a wine aspect that you ran into?
Yeah, the challenge was really that we were trying to build a product that had a feature that we couldn't deliver. It's quite simple, right? We want to tell people if this wine is good or not good. And you start out by not being able to do that. And you actually start out not being able to do that for a very, very long time. So that's really, really tricky. Like you talk about chicken and the egg. It's really, really difficult, right? And then you have to keep going. Like we went on for a very, very long time with really very little traction. We're just getting people to, you know, send us the pictures, rate the wine, keep doing it. And then slowly you build something that is reasonable. And it took us several years before it was really good.
So did you ever have any times where you were like, I can't do this anymore? I mean, did you run up against walls where you thought this was going to fail for financial or energy or bandwidth? Or I'm asking for my own sanity here. I mean, yes, I have a streaming service called SomTV, and I'll tell you, there are every night before I have a couple glasses of wine, I'm ready to quit. And then I have a couple glasses of wine and I look at my wife and I go, nope. All right. Really, she doesn't let me quit. But
it's a podcast, right? I can swear on here, right?
Yeah, you can say whatever you want.
Yeah, but it is every fucking day, right? That's it. And you have to, I think that is some of the difference between people that you just keep going. Like, it's just like, keep pushing, and hopefully you get there in the end, right? But it's all the time that you get this. And you'll obviously have a lot of victories here and there, and that's what keeps you going. But it's rough sometimes. I think the thing someone told me, this is many, many years ago, where I was like down, oh shit, this isn't going to work. What do we do? Someone said to me, hey, you should just do something you're less passionate about. And like that was a good point there. Like, if you don't want that roller coaster, do something you're less passionate about. But obviously, I'm never going to do that, right?
Oh God, this is like, I feel like I'm talking to myself right now. I made these films, and I know this podcast is about you, but I made these films and then we started SomTV. And it's a similar situation where we knew we wanted to make lots and lots of really high content, but we did not have, you know, all of the bugs and all the kinks and even the platform worked out and all these things. And it's also, you talk about, I mean, I can't even imagine how long you went without profit, probably telling yourself,
well,
your investors,
it's basically 10 years,
your family. Yeah, 10 years. I'm going to get you on the phone with my investors and say, you get 10 years, guys, before we make any money.
It takes a while.
I think there's this misconception when you see something seemingly working that people go, oh man, these people have a lot, you know, and that's just not the case. It's just not how it works. And I also think for anybody who is sitting in their basement or their office and they're stressing and trying to come up with an idea and make it work, they need to hear what you're saying. They need to understand wine and tech seems to move so fast. Everything, you know, Twitter, you know, news is dead in an hour or something like that on Twitter, but you have to be in this stuff for a long game. And wine is not a fast thing. It's just not. It takes
thousands of years. I sometimes say, like, be short-term impatient and long-term patient, right? So you want everything to happen right now, but you also know this is going to take a while.
Oh boy, that's good advice. It's hard to put it in action, but it's very good advice. I mean, I think I've started realizing that relaxing is more like how people take naps for me. You know, when you get into stuff, you can't actually go, I'm going to get 5 days off and get a vacation. That never happens. It'll never happen again. I'm sort of like looking in the mirror going, but what you do get is an hour, and you get 2 hours, and you get 40 minutes, and you realize, enjoy those times, because it's like you sit here and you think, why did this happen to me? And then you realize, I did this to myself. What am I talking about? So it's a fascinating process. So, all right, well, let's get into the insane amount of data you must have that people are inputting. I mean, I have questions like, what is the most drank wine? Have there ever been any wines that have been scanned once? Are there any weird stories? I mean, what do you have? I mean, you got to have some crazy stuff from the data.
Yeah, well, there are many things we can talk about on that. I'm trying to think what is a good story here. Like, one thing that is quite funny is that, you know, people, our data correlation with the experts is actually pretty good. So when we compare our ratings to Spectator and Parker, it's actually pretty good. But then there are a few outliers that just go crazy. And do you want to guess what that is?
Yeah, for sure. Outliers. Oh, geez.
They get too high a rating compared to everything else. And is there? Why is that? And what do you think those ones are?
I mean, geez. I mean, because the problem is I'm like Rolodexing, like, I mean, the wine world to me is enormous. It is so enormous. I mean, I would think, I mean, I guess probably these big 100-point Napa wine type stuff. I don't know. I mean, I couldn't
They get high ratings on Vivino too, right? Because the people actually drink them and rate them, they will get high ratings. This is a specific category that actually, although it has a low price point, gets really, really high ratings. And it's the only one I can think of that does that. Everything else, you know, price and quality, there's a difference. So, you know, you can always find a better $10 bottle of wine than the other one, but there is a certain overall correlation. But this one goes totally out of the box.
Is it a category of like where they're from? Because I mean, I could think of like very cheap wine at like Trader Joe's grocery stores, like $2 chuck and things like that. I mean,
No, let's get into it. Like it is the sweeter wines. So specifically Moscatos. So these sweet
like Barefoot Moscato, like really inexpensive stuff?
It could be a Barefoot Moscato. It could also be something better than that. But still, all these guys are the only ones that break the scale totally. They will get like a, you know, a 4.0 with us is like a what used to be a 90 before. But like these Moscatos will get like a 4.4 or something. Because the people are drinking, like, this is the most amazing thing ever.
You know, what's funny? On another podcast on our podcast network, Shakira Jones was interviewing Dwayne Wade, the basketball player. Yep. And he said his first wine that got him into wine was a Moscato.
Of course.
And he talked about, and of course, like she kind of chuckled, but I bet you if an NBA player's first wine is a Moscato, I bet you tons of people, that's their entry point.
For sure. And like, tell you about my daughter, she's 23 now, right? So she started out with these Moscatos and I bought a few for her and boom, boom, boom. And I was like, yeah, Dad, I don't drink those anymore. And now she's moving to, she likes New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc. It's just an example, right? Well, the journey has started, right? She'll be in red Napa country before you know it.
Oh, yeah. No, I think this is, anybody listening, I don't care how evolved they think they are, we all started somewhere, and then we all got into high acid wines, and then we all went into this, and then we all went into looking for aged wines, and then we all, you know, it sort of just goes, and then all of a sudden you find yourself in like, I want to taste stuff from the Canary Islands. I want to taste weird stuff. I want to taste, stuff, yeah. You know, it goes, did you have a similar path like that?
I did. So I started with, Australian Shiraz. I was like, oh, wow, this is amazing. It really tastes like something. And that was like a 17% Molly Duker Boxer. And like, I don't want to judge anyone on anything. People should drink whatever they want, right? But I just can't drink that anymore. But it's very so fascinating what they do, right?
Yeah, it is a interesting process. All right, so keep going with some of this stuff. What is some of the data that surprised you? Any weird stuff? I mean, does your staff come to you and go, what in the hell? Look at
what happened here.
Look at what the United Kingdom is drinking right now. Is there anything like, you know, one city just loves something or?
There are a couple of things that we find interesting. Like another thing that which makes a lot of sense is that Americans rate everything higher. I think that's also like the Germans will rate lower whatever they drink compared to Americans. Like, I mean, that's not a surprise, but when you think about it, it's like psychology comes out there, right?
Yeah, I've spent some time in Germany and I know Americans being one. And you think it's because of like an optimism thing or do you think we're just like, you know?
I think it's almost like built in psychology, right? Yeah, Americans sort of sell more like this is good and like, say the word loud sounds, but you know.
No, we are very loud. You can always tell the American at the cafe.
I'll let you say that.
Yeah, we are.
And Germans are a little bit, no, this is okay. This is fine. And then they really love it. But they just, it's communication, right? They communicate through our app and they're just going to be a little bit modest around it, right? So I think that was quite funny too.
Oh, that is really funny. It's like almost you could have like, this is a German 3, but an American 5.
Yes, like, exactly. Yeah.
Which is the same thing. Like, you have to rate it based on, like, that's really, really funny. What else? What else? Keep going.
So,
I love this
so
stuff.
Another thing we notice, and this, I think people in the industry might know this already, but there's actually quite a big difference what people drink on the West Coast and the East Coast, right? So West Coast is much, much more heavy on American, Californian wines and so on. And when you go to the East Coast, it's much more French actually than, and we might not think about that, but it's actually a really big difference there. I think that was quite interesting to see too.
Wow. All right. So, but I think that France has always had a kind of a stranglehold on New York City and
for sure,
and Boston and all of these places, but it's funny that it's still like that.
It's still a big difference. Yeah, for sure. But then again, when you think about, you know, you're moving a bottle of wine too. So logistics, you know, New York is close to Paris, right? Maybe almost as close as Napa is. Not quite, but almost, right?
Oh, sure. Yeah, no. It's very close. What about France? Do you guys have the app in France?
Yeah, so this is also interesting, right? The app is available in 20 languages now. And France really, really took us a while to get going. Whereas a lot of other markets, you know, it just grew. And like a Brazil was our second biggest market as it comes to insults for a long time because they were like new wine drinkers. They loved Vivino. But the French, that took us a while. But now it's like totally blowing up there. Also, it could be different things, but also the quality of the app has just increased now. And that is it. Yeah, now it's good enough for us too. So yeah, they love us in France.
What are they drinking? Because that's the big question. I mean, are the French only drinking French wine? Or do you see anything? I would die to know what American, Italian wines, what German wines are they drinking in France? Like, I would kill to know this.
Yeah. So first of all, people do drink local wine a lot, right? But there's some really funny twists there in that, I think. So we can still sell a lot of Italian wines in France. And then you reverse it and like there's nothing the Italians like more than champagne, right? So there's a lot of interesting things there. But the more you are in a wine producing area, I think it's more likely you drink the local stuff. And that's coming back to where I'm from and so on. You know, I'm from the Faroe Islands. Obviously, there wasn't much there, but even Copenhagen, where I spent a lot of my time. So why did we build this app in Copenhagen? Because the wine scene, there's no production as such, but it's very, very interesting, right? Because there's so much, there's everything out there. Well, like if you live on the left bank of Bordeaux, you know, maybe you'll see mostly left bank Bordeaux, but in Copenhagen and wherever, Stockholm, you'll see everything, right? Which is, makes it really exciting.
Yeah, I think that's a lot where I'm from the Midwest, and being from Ohio, there is some wine in Ohio, but I wouldn't call it, you know, I wouldn't call it setting the world on fire wine. And so it was an interesting thing to be from there and then come out to California, where most restaurants here have Californian wine.
Yeah.
But being in Ohio is closer to the East Coast. So it's kind of funny to think that a lot of what I saw as a kid was actually, you know, inexpensive Italian wine, you know, cheap Chianti and stuff like that. Whereas when I moved out here, I just didn't see that stuff.
No, exactly.
So Copenhagen's a perfect place to do this.
I would think so, right? People love wine, drink a lot of wine, but are not religious to a specific thing. I remember one guy telling a story about like the thinking in France. Again, this is, you know, it's an anecdote, but he said his grandfather, he came from the left bank, and if he really wanted to explore, you know, he would taste some right bank. That was about it. So
yeah, it depends, it's so right? funny. But that's also what makes France so great is that, you know, and Italy, they're so provincial. You know, they make this food here. I mean, especially in Italy, you know, they have this pasta, they have this grape, they have this thing. And then
it's
you go
so fantastic,
10 kilometers and they have a totally different pasta and they don't even talk to the people in the next town, which is why it's so wonderful to go.
Certainly but, wouldn't taste their wine.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, you know, back to Germany. So do the Germans... Germany is one of my absolute favorite places to film. I have a lot of friends there. We really love the history. I don't think Germans realize how funny they are, but
in their own way.
Yeah, in their own way. They just don't realize that they are hilarious. But when it comes to the German wine drinking, are they as provincial? Are they drinking a lot of German wine? Because I picture them not.
Yeah, so when we look at that, obviously there is amazing wine in Germany, right? We both know that.
Incredible.
But
incredible.
It is very Italian what we see in Germany. Germany is relatively, it's very competitive, very value-driven, and it really matches the Italian wines really, really well. So Italy is massive in Germany.
Wow, interesting. I wonder why. I bet you that if we were going to talk about personalities, it's because the Italian wines are the opposite of German wines.
It could be, right? You're compensating.
Yeah, I mean, the Italian wines are very... I mean, I feel like even their wine laws they created just to go, see, we have some structure, you know, but you're allowed to put some white grapes in there, and you're allowed to do this, and you're allowed to do that. And it's whereas the German wines, if you look at just the laws they have just to exist, I mean, it's like they created bureaucracy to create bureaucracy to create bureaucracy. And the Italians are totally the opposite. There's like, you know, I've been to some wineries where I'm pretty sure a goat is the head winemaker. And so it's just, that's a really interesting thing to think about, the differences in culture, and that they would drink. I wonder, has Australian wines, have they reached out to you and said, can you tell us what our market penetrations are like? I mean, are actual wine regions wanting to know about your data?
Yeah, they've started to do so more and more. So we work both with wineries now and regions. And the cool thing is, like, we have GPS positions on a lot of these things, so we can tell them exactly, you know, where people drink their wines. And in some cases, they would, you know, send pallets and pallets of wine out, and they don't know exactly where people have it, right? And we can help them do that, and that's kind of cool, right?
God, I wonder if there's a way you could use your app to find gray markets, stolen... I mean, have you guys ever had anything scanned where you're like, there was no vintage that year? This is a fake wine? I mean, is that...
I mean, not that we know of, but I remember there was some... I can't remember, this was some theft or something. I think that was in Denmark. And we tried to look up and see if we could find anyone had scanned those particular very rare wines, like 48 hours after. We couldn't find anything at that time. But at some point, you know, you never know. We have scans in North Korea. Though we're not sure how they get there.
Really? You have North Korea? All right, now I got to ask, what are they supposedly drinking in North Korea?
Yeah, I think it was something fancy. I can't remember. It was some kind of champagne. Bordeaux. As far as I remember. I know also the leader that he drinks a lot of Hennessy is supposed to. But yeah, I think this was champagne as far as I remember. Some fancy champagne.
Interesting. Well, on the Hennessy question, are you guys ever going to get into spirits or...
I think it's a good question. We talk a lot about it, and I think there is a chance. I think, you know, this is something we're good at, dealing with data, right? So if we say, hey, we're going to do this, structuring the data, you know, cleaning, all those things we're pretty good at. So it would fit us really well. So we are definitely thinking about it.
All right. So when you transition into sales, you know, and you're selling the wines, I guess this is more of just like an ethics question. How do you keep your soul? Because, you know, and also if there's so many different wines, how do you have all of that in stock? How do you handle all of this? It seems like a logistical nightmare.
Well, it is. Unfortunately, we try and not deal with it. So we are a marketplace, which means that we connect all these wine merchants to the app. So we work with all the big sellers, right? And plug them into the system. And what we usually say is when like, you know, how do we keep ourselves clean and all those things? Like, first of all, we don't rate wines and we actually don't sell wines either. So we don't think it's a big problem. And I think the important thing here is for us, it's always got to be about one thing, giving people the best possible wine for them. And no matter how we think, whatever, do we make money, do it up, it doesn't matter, because if we give them the best wine, they'll come back and buy again. So that's always going to be our thing. Get people the best possible wine for them.
Yeah. So do you have to vet retailers in every single city and country? I mean, or do you trust that they just handle the customer service properly? I mean, it's...
Yeah, so we... That's important. We do the customer service ourselves. So we are going to be first line on all these things because, you know, they are obviously the ones selling the wine. But, you know, when they're using the app, we have to service our users and so on. So we do handle that part of it. And when it comes to vetting, yes, aggressively vet them. We look at every single number, like how quickly they ship, is it the right thing? Do we have too many complaints and so on? And we'll throw a lot of them out again.
So are you able to get crazy wines? I mean, one of the things we do on Somme TV and with these films is we chase stories. And so a lot of the times these wines are, sometimes they're old, sometimes they're just really rare and strange or from a weird place. Can you get a hold of crazy wines?
I can get access to, I think, especially places when I, you know, when I go somewhere and show my business card, that really helps, honestly. And then I get invited to things that, like, I really shouldn't be. I mean, I'm not worthy of all these fancy wines and all these people that are much more.
I feel that way often myself.
I'm like, oh, yeah. What the heck? Have you been to the wine symposium in Lake Como?
No, I have not. But I wish I could tell you that my villa was across from there, but it's not. No,
it's really nice. I've not. They have it every year.
I've been to the lakes up there. It's absolutely stunning. Beautiful. But I've not been to the wine symposium.
Exactly, it's beautiful. And then I was there and I was speaking there. And then we have this wine tasting year coming. She said, "What is? Yeah, it's Romano Conti, and we do 15 different wines." Like, holy crap! And we sit there for an hour or two, and people are like crying and like, "What the heck is going on here?" But yeah, it was good. But it was definitely too good for me.
People are crying.
Yeah, it was like, you can't speak during the wine tasting, seriously.
And that's so amazing.
DRC, what is his name? Aubert? I think it's Aubert.
Aubert de Valen, yeah.
Yeah, he was on stage presenting all the wines, obviously.
Yeah, he's what a wonderful guy he is.
Yeah, for sure.
Very, very, it was one of the first times I sat down and quietly had a couple glasses of DRC was when we filmed the second movie in the cellar with him. And
that's
so
cool. It was amazing.
But again, it goes back to what you said. I mean, I often look at this and I look around and go, why the hell do I have the right to do this?
Yes.
I mean, it's like, I just am, it's just lucky situation.
For sure. And I enjoy it. It's not that.
Oh yeah. No, of course. I mean, this is one of the great perks of, well, I guess both of our jobs, but
yes, exactly.
So what's the future look like? I mean, are you guys moving towards profitability? Do you feel good? Are you still, you know, how do you feel about Vivino? I mean, obviously there's a lot of wine drinkers that can't live without this app now.
No, that helps us quite a bit. Yeah, no.
Oh, I mean, you've done it.
Yeah, we feel really good, honestly. Like 2020 has in many ways been very difficult, and difficult for a lot of people, has really also been a breakthrough for us. Commercially, we've never done better. The business is break even now and growing incredibly fast. So we're incredibly pleased. I think the other thing I want to talk quickly is one of the next things we're really launching now is we want to work more with personalization, which means, you know, we want to know all the wines in the world. And then we want to look at what Jason likes. And then we're going to put those two together and say, okay, this exact wine Jason's going to love. And one of the things we're launching very soon is what you know from Netflix, that putting this percentage on every single movie. We're going to do that with every single wine in the world.
Oh, wow. That's very scary. Ambitious. I mean, I wonder how, you know, you are either going to be the greatest thing to some producers and probably very scary to others. I mean, you know, especially considering the amount of, well, baseless marketing dollars that just get thrown around in this business. I wonder if maybe we'll see a shift in how wine is marketed and done. I like the idea that it's going to be based on quality and price.
Exactly.
Together. That's what it should be about.
Exactly. And I remember this is almost 9-10 years ago. I'm sitting down with a guy who has run quite a few supermarkets, and it was locally in Copenhagen. And we start talking about wine. I think, why the heck does this guy know so much about wine? And then he says to me, looks me in the eye and says, you know, that's where we make our money, right? And I'm not saying I don't want them to make money. I'm just saying, hey, what I really want is transparency. I want people to drink the best possible wine. That's what it's all about. I don't want someone to make too much money because they made a fancy label.
Yeah. Well, I think the thing that if I could put my finger on the one thing I've learned the most after making all these movies and being in this world is that you don't have to spend a lot on good wine. You really don't.
Especially not in Europe.
Yeah. Well, Europe is mind-boggling. You know, you can be in the south of, you know, in the Languedoc or the south of France, and you can drink incredible rosé for $6 a bottle. I mean, like, exactly. It's amazing. And the same goes for, you know, if you're in Chablis or you're in northern Italy, or I mean, the wine in Europe, and I think Europeans just take this for granted at a certain point, that you can just have wine at lunch and it's a $5 or $3 glass and it's about 40 times better than what you can get at a restaurant in the United States and about a third of the price. It's you guys are very lucky in that regard. Well, I mean, this is just endlessly fascinating. I want to dig into some weird stuff on your app and see how far I can go and what I can find. I want to do this again with you. Would you come on again?
I would love to come on again. Thank you very much.
Oh, Great stuff. All right. So before we end, you got to tell me something you've drank. What are you drinking right now? What do you recommend? What are you drinking right now that people should know about?
That's a good question right there. I honestly don't drink super expensive wine. Sometimes I do, like I said, to events and so on. Recently, I was on, and I'm not going to, you know, be too advertising on the app here. But anyway, I was on the app and I found this, it was like $10 in Copenhagen, and it was an American wine from Monterey. It's like, I gotta try it. It was some kind of blend from Monterey, California. And I think I just moved away from California. And now I'm drinking this. It was literally $10 that nobody heard about. It was really nice. I think it was called Ranch 22 or something. I was just impressed by that. That was just a story I wanted to tell. So sometimes you can find really good value for money, right? And now you're on the other side of the world.
And so you actually are using your own app to discover wine.
Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure. And again, I am like, I also built this app for myself. The Wine Explorer, as we call it, it's built for people like me that want to say, I want the best possible wine. And I right now want to spend $25. I say red, I say Cabernet Sauvignon, and boom, we'll find you the best wine within that category. So very numbers driven. And that matches me really well. Yeah.
So cool. Well, this is a huge honor to have you on. I love this. I'm going to go drink something from Monterey right now.
You have to. Thank you very much for having me on. It's been such a pleasure.
No, thanks, Hein. I appreciate it very much. We will talk again soon.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Don't forget to go to Som Blinders, blindersgame.com. Blindersgame.com is where you can get one or all three decks of our blind tasting card game. The holidays are coming. This is a great gift. Do not delay. All right, everybody, please stay safe and please, please be nice to those around you.